The Pre-Made Year, session number 579. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Made Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to The Pre-Made Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have an awesome guest today, a dermatologist who had to show some perseverance on her journey to medical school, needing to take the MCAT three times, reapply to medical school, but ultimately succeeded on her journey, her dream, to do what she is doing now. Let's go and jump in. Say hello to our guest today, Dr. Aniela Douglas, a dermatologist who had to show a lot of perseverance on her journey to medical school. Aniela, welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm excited to chat with you, a physician out in the world, but not too far removed from this whole medical education craziness. When did you first realize you wanted to be a doctor?
When did I first realize? So I actually didn't realize until I was in undergrad, and it actually still took me a little bit of time to figure out what I wanted to do. So I was in undergrad. I had changed my major multiple times, and it was when I chose the anthropology major, and I was learning about the history of humans and the health, and then we also talked about public health there as well. I started getting interested in medicine, and I was like, maybe I want to be a doctor, but I wasn't too sure. And it was really around that time I started playing around with the idea, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to commit or not. And it took a few more years for me to actually commit to the decision.
How did you do that whole kind of decision algorithm to commit? What were you kind of researching? What questions were you asking yourself? How did you figure it out?
So it took a little bit. So first of all, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be in training for so long. And all the people that I just like came across as acquaintances who were on the journey to becoming a physician, they already knew they wanted to do that since before coming to college. And I was still trying to figure out if I wanted to do it, if I wanted to commit to all the years. And I actually have an uncle who he's an engineer, but he has friends who are doctors. So when he heard that I was considering it, he was really kind of pushing me to do it. And then I was also doing research with a mentor, and when I was in college as well. And interestingly, he was also pushing me to be a physician as well. So I had a few people saying that I should do it. And then I was just like, I'm not sure if I should commit to all the years. And really, I graduated undergrad and worked my first year out, and was also an ER scribe. And I said, if I like it, then I will commit. And it was at that point I committed.
How much, first question, any family members in healthcare, in medicine?
No.
So this is all new territory for you, right, and your family as you're going through this, which is not uncommon. I was a first generation 4-year college student, first doctor in the family, all that stuff as well. When you said you weren't ready to commit, how much of that was truly you weren't ready to commit to all of those years, but some imposter syndrome as well of like, can I do it? Or am I smart enough? Or what happens a lot is like, I don't see anyone else that looks like me as doctors. Mm-hmm. Is that a thing?
It is a thing. It is. When you don't know anyone really in the field, you're just like, is this even something that's attainable? Mm-hmm. And then also there's so many people who make it seem like becoming a doctor is out of reach. Yeah. And a lot of those people aren't doctors. But when you talk to them, when you talk to people, they're like, that's so hard. Why would you spend so many years? And you hear a lot more naysayers than people supporting you. But it was nice that I had those few people just saying like, you should think about it. You should do it. And it's funny because I even shadowed a pharmacist, and the pharmacist suggested that I should consider becoming a physician. Yeah.
Have you ever gone back and thanked those people for encouraging you?
So funny enough, I actually emailed the mentor that I had, and I was really sad he didn't respond. So I figured his email changed or something. But I actually wrote a very heartfelt email a few years ago.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then the pharmacist actually was a neighbor of one of my family members. So we actually keep in contact as well.
That's awesome. So obviously making the decision to pursue medicine and actually doing it are two different things. What do you think was the hardest thing about being a pre-med student, looking back in your journey?
It's just the not being sure if it was even worth it, not being sure if you'd even get there. I took the MCAT 3 times, and when I look back at it, I had no clue what I was doing. So even though I fully committed after I graduated college, I took the MCAT the year before, but I took the MCAT more of, let's just see how I can do, which that's not...
Don't do that.
Right, that's not what to do. And so it's just spending all these years of your life working really hard and not being sure if you'd even get into medical school. I think that's what's so hard. And it's just the doubt that you put into yourself. And it's a lot of work. So I think that's what it is.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of money, a lot of investment, with an unsure reward at the other end. And it's hard, depending on where people are coming from a socioeconomic standpoint, from a family responsibility standpoint. It's incredibly hard. So when you think about your journey, what was it that allowed you to keep going? Because as you mentioned, right, 3 MCATs, multiple application cycles. I have talked to plenty of people in similar situations who say, enough, right? I'm not doing this anymore.
Same. For me, and it sounds so cheesy, I talked about this on my YouTube channel too, but it was my mom, who's not even in medicine. So when I started going through the journey, my mom started doing a ton of research. She was started doing a ton of research of how to become a doctor. And my mom, like, I remember when I got my 3rd MCAT back and it was like barely any better. She was like, Anyela, no, look at the scores. You just didn't do that good. And I took it, of course, years back. So this is when it was like verbal, not the new one now. But she was like, look at the scores. You still did pretty good, except just in this one section. So she was just like, start looking at programs that are listening at you, looking at candidates holistically. Mm-hmm. Don't apply to programs that are saying that they are looking for specific scores. Like, she was the one who just kept pushing me. She's like, no, I know you'll be a great doctor. We're gonna work through this. And I remember after that last MCAT, I was so over it. I was like, I need to figure out something to do with my life. I don't know what I'm going to do. And she just really pushed me. So it really was my mom.
You had a cheerleader behind
I
you.
I surely did, yes.
Cheerleader, advisor, mentor, therapist, all of that all rolled into one. Mm-hmm. So when you're going through this process, you're applying to medical school, taking the MCAT multiple times, what are you doing, like, literally with your time? Because I'm assuming you're out of college at that point.
Yeah. So when I the first time I took it, I was not really doing what I was supposed to do, and I was just not balancing things correctly. The second time I took it, also, I was working. The third time I took it, though, I did commit to just focusing on just studying. So that's really how I spent the time with the MCAT. The first 2 times, I was doing other things. The last time, I really sat down and studied. And like I said, I did do some improvement, but my verbal score had dropped.
Yeah. In terms of experiences, jobs, what kind of stuff were you doing to keep busy?
Yeah. So when I graduated, luckily enough, I was able to work in a mortgage company, the one that my mom worked at. And I was a part-time ER scribe. Okay. The second year, and the second year also was one of my game changers too. I did do a SMP program at USF, and I rave about that program. It was 1 year accelerated, so you weren't wasting too much time of your life. It was 1 year.
Yep.
And then not really wasting your time, but you know what I'm saying, just more time not in med school.
Yeah.
And then also it's 1 year of tuition. And so I did the SMP program, and that was what I did that year. And then the following year, when I was applying to medical school, I was a family med scribe. So I was busy all throughout.
Okay. The SMP program, so special master's program, for those who don't know that the SMP terminology, was that an integration into the medical school, or was that different curriculum? What was that like?
It was a different curriculum, but it was alongside the medical school. So the medical school students, they did their own thing. Okay. And then we had our own classes as well. But the way they have pitched their program, and I took this program when it was like in their third year, so they were still relatively new. And one of their pitches was that they tried to mimic with the first 2 years of medical school.
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of studying. It was really hard. But what was my game changer is that I got a 4.0 in that program.
Nice.
And yeah, I worked really, really hard. I think one of the things for me was that I moved to, funny enough, that was my first time moving in Florida, but that was in Tampa. And I was not around any distractions. I was really able to focus, and I really worked hard, and I got a 4.0, which out of like over 100 people in the program, it was like 20 something people who got a 4.0.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Obviously, the goal of those SMP programs typically is to prove academic readiness. Was that something that you did because you struggled in undergrad and you were concerned about how medical schools would view your grades and academic readiness?
Yeah. So when I was in undergrad, I didn't know I wanted to be a doctor, like I said, until later on. And I started off as a biochem major because when we're going back a little bit, I went to a science high school in Brooklyn, Brooklyn Tech. Mm-hmm. And so I only really knew sciences. And when I was in high school, I was like, oh, I want to be a biochemist. So I was a biochem major, but I ended up hating biochem major. And when you're in college and you can't even relate to the classes, and you know, a lot of those programs are like weed out classes, and you're getting like a 40 on a test, and then you're just like, what? Like, it just wasn't really, I just was not doing well. And also, to be honest, I also wasn't studying as much as I should have. I was, you know, there's a lot of distractions in college, so I wasn't studying as much as I should have as well.
Yeah. Coming out of the SMP, a lot of times, again, 4.0 is fantastic. You are in a position to prove to medical schools that you're doing well, but then your MCAT score is there as well. When you're trying to figure out, am I ready to apply? Am I good enough? This is my third time. You got your mom telling you, go for it. Find the schools that will apply. How do you know, like, looking back, you had to apply twice. How did you know you were ready that second time?
I didn't know. That's the thing. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I actually wasn't even going to apply until my mom pushed me to. I didn't know. And one of the lessons I learned from that experience is to just do it scared, because you put all your effort in. And I knew I put all my effort in. I was so bummed out. I was like, how could I have a 4.0 GPA, did so well, understood my classes, got strong letters of recs, and still didn't do great on the MCAT.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's no way a school is going to take me. But I was wrong. I applied to programs, and I got maybe like five interviews.
What was it like to get that first interview?
Oh, I was so excited. I was like thinking about even applying to Caribbean schools too. Mm-hmm. And then I was just like, I applied, and I was just like, I'll just wait a little bit. And as soon as I got my first one, I was like, oh my goodness. And it was a relatively good school, like very good reputation. And I was just like, oh my God, if I got this interview, then I should be.
I'm gonna get interviews at all my schools.
Right. And I was like, I should be okay.
So. You went from like 0 to 100 on your confidence scale very quickly, which is good. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
When you were in your interviews, how concerned were you that they were gonna bring up your MCAT score and your GPA and all of this stuff? And did they eventually?
They did.
Yeah.
They did. But you know, the interviewing skills where they teach you that you make everything a positive. So even if they brought up the MCAT, I would say that, you know, unfortunately, it didn't perform the way I expected to. But as you can see with my 4.0 GPA, how serious I am and committed, and I pitched the program that I was in. So they did bring it up, and they do look at all of those things, but you really have to show confidence in yourself. And the fact that they were interviewing me, I knew that they, you know, were interested in me. So I just need to sell it.
Yeah. What was it like to finally get that first acceptance?
It was very exciting. I got waitlisted first at a program, but I got accepted to a program that I actually were. So my first acceptance was where I ended up going to, which was Penn State College of Medicine in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
When I got that interview, I actually wasn't that excited because I was like, what am I going to do in Hershey, Pennsylvania?
I'm a girl from Brooklyn.
I ended up going on the interview, and when I tell you I was blown away by that program, I was just like, if this is how my interview is, I definitely want to go there. Yeah. It was just peaceful. It was quiet. It was just actually a different pace that I wasn't used to, and I was just like, oh, I would love to study here. The people were so friendly.
It's definitely not Brooklyn.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So how did your mom respond when you told her you got into school?
Oh, she was just so excited. And she was just like, I knew it.
she listened to me all the time.
Right. She's like, I knew it, yeah.
That's awesome. What was the transition to medical school coming from undergrad and obviously excelling in your SMP program? Was medical school another level, or did the SMP program prepare you pretty well?
The med school was another level, but I will say I did not struggle as many other med students do. I felt like I was doing pretty good, like at the first year. It was more along the second year of med school where things to me got a little bit harder. So usually people, and that's really because you start studying for step exams, right? Yeah. But usually people are like struggling in their first year, and like for me it was just fine. It was just like my master's program, really. And that allowed me to also be part of a lot of organizations because med school didn't feel as difficult as, I guess, what some people experience when they're going from undergrad to med school. So I was in a lot of organizations, and it carried over to my second year. And I think I was doing a lot. I was in a lot of organizations, and then I was studying, and then step exams were coming up. And then second year felt a little bit more difficult for me.
A lot of the excuse I'll use for lack of a better term, the excuse for keeping the MCAT around is that it predicts how well students are going to do on the step exams. Talk about your experience with step one compared to the MCAT.
So step one was hard for me, and this is what happened and what I realized when I go back to everything, when it goes back to my MCAT scores. Step one, I was in lots of organizations. I was also studying. And then when we got dedicated time for step one, and I started doing well, but then my heart started beating fast.
And this was before step one was pass fail.
Right. Yes. This is when all the scores matter. And my heart would start beating fast. I was no longer able to sleep. I was up 24 hours and I couldn't understand why. I was feeling sick all the time. And then it turned out I had really bad anxiety. And I actually had to take a little bit of time off. I went to my school to talk to them, and they let me take a little bit of time off, and they said I had anxiety. I actually went to talk to a therapist about it, and that's when I identified that I had test-taking anxiety, and that's why I struggled so much with the MCAT as well. But at that time, I couldn't identify what was wrong because I think with the MCAT, even though I was studying for it, it was still shorter. But with medical school, you are at a stress level constantly.
Yeah.
And all that happens is just goes up more.
Just baseline stress, right? And cortisol. And then so that difference is harder to perceive.
So they allowed me to take a little bit of time off. I just had to adjust my schedule a little bit. And this is why I actually loved my med school. I rave about my med school as well, because they were just so supportive to just let me take some time off, talk to a therapist, just get plugged in with that. I was able to go back home, and I actually studied for step one at home. And then when I took my step one, I did fine. I did good.
Well, you're a dermatologist now, so you obviously did well enough, because it is a competitive specialty to match into. Lots of students struggle with test anxiety in general. Anxiety was something I never really experienced until I did not that long ago. And I'm like, oh, this is what anxiety feels like. And it was just weird, because I didn't know until I felt it myself. Mm-hmm. For students who are struggling with studying for the MCAT or taking the MCAT or whatever it is they're struggling with, what was it in you that you felt that a provider was like, that's test anxiety. Like, duh. Like, what was that for you that you were feeling, so that other students listening may go, oh, shoot, maybe that's what I have?
So first of all, I felt relief, because even when I was taking the MCAT, and then, so just to go back, I'm a first generation. My family's from the Caribbean. So when I used to call my mom about the MCAT, and I'll say, my heart is like pounding out of my chest. Like, I can't sleep. You know, I'm feeling sick while studying. She'll be like, oh, you're just being dramatic, right? So I just always...
We don't talk about feelings.
I was just like, oh my God, I just feel like I'm being dramatic.
Yeah.
But it's funny, just with the years, as years pass, and when I talked to my mom and my significant other as well, when I was like, I am not sleeping, like, days on end, and like not, and like just thinking about studying is just like making me sick. Like, I can't eat food. Like, I actually lost the weight. That's when they were just, my mom and my now fiance was just like, no, you need to talk to somebody. You actually need to go to the doctor. And so they kind of pushed me. And then when I went and was seen, I just felt relief, because it just feels like, okay, I'm not crazy. I'm not dramatic. I'm not, like, you know, you just, all the things that you were telling yourself, it's just like, this is actually something that needs to be managed. Yeah. And truthfully, once I got managed on that, it made things so much better, because I actually started taking medication around test taking time.
Yeah.
And then once I started doing that, like, we were able to time it, like, maybe, I think it was like a few weeks before and a few weeks after. And I continued counseling, because I've reached a point now, like, you know, I did residency and you do tests then and stuff like that. I reached a point where I no longer needed any of that. But at that time, I started with taking some anxiety medication a little bit before the exams, so I can just feel calm while studying and during the exam as well.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, because I think a lot of students need to hear that to understand, like, oh, like, that's why I'm struggling. And I talk to a lot of students, and they'll be like, I'm getting A's in all of my classes, but for some reason I can't pass my tests. I'm like, well, have you thought about test anxiety? Have you thought about, do you have dyslexia? Right? Some students will be like, the professor quizzed me and I knew all of the answers, but when it comes to actually sitting down and taking the test, I struggle. I'm like, well, go test yourself for dyslexia or ADHD or something else. So I think it's important to make sure that we all understand ourselves and are taking the proper steps to help in whatever way we need help.
Yeah, so. Because as soon as I found out, I just started talking about it to, like, my classmates and stuff like that, because I just wanted people to just feel comfortable, like, if they were experiencing something like that, it's just not something taboo to talk about. Like, no, this is stressful, and it's okay if we're feeling stressed, and it's just maybe a little bit more than stress than you can handle. Like, it's okay.
It's okay. When along the journey did you figure out you wanted to be a dermatologist?
So that's also, I feel like everything with me is just, I was like, it just so happened. that I just wanted to take a course, because dermatology is not a core part of the core curriculum for medical school.
Yep.
It's an elective that you can ask to take. And so I wanted a course where I can just study for my core exams. So I was just like, I'm going to take dermatology, because it'll just be a few weeks where it's a chill rotation, where I could study for my internal med rotation, so I can study for, like, my shelf exams. So I took the elective, but then I just ended up loving it, because you get exposure to dermatology in your curriculum for medical school, but it was so short, and we talked about just, like, very basic things, and it did not, I was not interested in it at all. And it wasn't until I did the elective, I was like, wait, I love this. It's more than just acne. And mind you, I love treating acne, but it was more than acne. There's inflammatory rashes. It's the way it affects people and affects how people view themselves. It was just so much more. And it's just how you can see so many different things in your day. You could be doing procedures. You could be doing just so many different things. You could be doing surgeries. I just loved it. I was just like, wow, there's so many different things I could do in just one day. Usually, I love the outpatient aspect as well. And when I did the elective, I was like, oh my goodness, I really enjoy dermatology, but I didn't, you know, make my journey towards dermatology. So then I was just like, I think it's too late to say that I want to do dermatology, because I had a good step score, but I thought it should have been higher. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't have any publications. I didn't have any research in derm. And I was already in the beginning of my third year of medical school. And I was just like, I can't believe I like dermatology. I thought I was going to be in internal medicine because I just love general medicine. Or maybe OBGYN. So that's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. And then I was just like, I'm going to do those rotations and probably see what I'm going to do if I still am thinking about dermatology. And after dermatology, nothing else I could think about other than dermatology. Like, I was like, I need to do this.
You were fixated on it. Can't let it go. We were talking earlier about going through this whole process and not knowing the reward at the other end, right? Getting into med school, is it even worth it? The residency application process is kind of that to an extreme, and then you pick a very competitive specialty like dermatology. Mm-hmm. And now you're saying, hey, I don't have this, I don't have that, I'm choosing dermatology later. Like, what steps did you take to kind of fill in that gap?
So the first thing I did was went back to the derm program and just talked to the people there. And what I did was that the holidays were coming up, and that's when people get to go home. And I decided to stay back and rotate, mm-hmm. which was really nice because there was nobody really there but me. And that's when I was able to ask for, I was able to ask, well, me and the residents. Okay. No, the med students weren't around. So yeah, so really it felt like it was just me.
Yeah.
And I was able to ask for research opportunities there and also build a relationship with some of the residents there as well. And they were able to push me as well and just say, keep going and just giving me tips. And then also they also have mentorship programs. And one of the faculty there told me to sign up for the dermatology mentorship program. And then once I got into the mentorship program, I was just like, okay, I'm going full force with this. So I was just like, I need to get some publications within the next several months before I have to apply to residency. And I worked really, really hard. But I did it, and I got publications, and I found out that in my medical school, they had a volunteer program where the derm program would go and give free care in the community, so I was volunteer there as well, so I did that every month, and at that time, a lot of students weren't doing that, so mm-hmm. that made me stand out as well, so I was able to build a great relationship with the derm program, and the derm program at my medical school strongly, strongly supported me. So that was also so helpful for me because I was able to build a really good relationship with them even in that short time.
Yeah. Getting into med school is fantastic. That feeling that you're going to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. What was match day like for you?
Oh, match day was unbelievable because so that's the thing. I still doubted that I was going to match into dermatology. So I actually ended up dual applying.
Oh, the dreaded dual apply. Let's talk about that. Why did you dual apply? That self-doubt still there.
It was still there.
Yeah.
I know it's pass fail now, but I felt like my step one score still wasn't high enough for someone who didn't have as many publications as someone who knew they wanted to do derm in their first year of medical school.
Yeah.
And I was in a class of people who were gunning for derm from their first year of med. So I was just so nervous. And then also, but I think some of the things that saved me was that I was just such a passionate person that, like I said, I was in a lot of organizations for my first year. So things like that helped me stand out. And that kind of like helps the fact that I didn't have as much research is because I was in so many organizations and not just in it. I was a leader and I did presentations and I did all these other things and that passion came out as well. So, but still, even though they told me I didn't need to dual apply, I dual applied. And looking back on it, I really didn't need to. And I lost out on some applying to certain programs because the programs that I dual applied at, I didn't do both. I either did, like, for example, residency program A, only I was going to apply to either derm or internal med, not both.
Yeah.
There are so many different things I heard back and forth about dual applying. So I was just like, not sure what the rules were. So I felt like that was the safe way to go.
Yeah. Okay. So talk about match day. What was that like?
Oh, it was very emotional.
Yeah.
It was very emotional because my family was in Philly by the time I was graduating medical school. So I wanted to be in Philly. So I knew I wanted to be at the specific program. And it just felt really great to match derm. It was just like, wow, this whole journey was worth it. It felt such a relief. I always say match day was one of the best days of my life. Graduation didn't even mean that much to me because after match day, you couldn't tell me anything.
You're done. You're done at that point.
Really? I was like, I already knew.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. What was the hardest thing about being a resident?
The hardest thing about being a resident, I loved being a resident. It was just such a great time to learn and just the hardest thing, probably intern year, because in dermatology, you have to do that intern year of internal medicine. That's what I did my intern year. And so it's just working all the time. You only have one day off. You're taking care of really sick patients. I was the year who, for COVID, the first year of COVID. So that was just really, really tough. And I was like, I want to be a dermatologist. I'm on the front line for COVID.
Yeah.
But it's just like I actually enjoyed my intern year, but we worked really, really hard. And like I said, during COVID, it was just an emotional time for everybody.
Yeah. That time will set you up for success for your forever future. So that'll be good. I think residency is it's an important confidence builder, just to know that you can handle so much. If you handled COVID, you'll probably be okay.
For sure.
You're now out of residency doing some fellowship training. Talk about how you decided to kind of further subspecialize.
Okay, so dermatology is just very unique because there's so many different routes you can take, okay? So I love hair disorders. So even though I love general derm as well, I love hair disorders. And there's a lot of people in dermatology who don't focus on hair disorders. So it's just like a good little niche as well to have because there are a lot of people who are looking for someone who's passionate about treating hair disorders. And when I was in residency, I spent a lot of time shadowing other dermatologists who specialize in hair disorders. I did research in it as well. And then when I was coming towards the end of my training, I found out about you could do hair fellowship as well. And although it's not ACGME recognized, it's recognized by the hair societies. And so I was just like, why not do that? If I want to be a hair loss expert, not only do I want to do the medical management, but I also want to be able to do the surgical management as well. And that's really how I got into it. And it's not every day. I'm a full-time working dermatologist. I see patients every day. And a few times a month, I'm able to go and do transplants as well. So it's very exciting, very busy.
That's awesome.
We do stuff such as Journal Club as well. So we're keeping up on the literature on hair disorders and hair loss.
I love watching all the TikTok videos of the guys that go to Turkey for their hair transplants.
And
like the videos of the plane ride home and everyone's wearing their caps because they all went for their hair transplants. That medical tourism is a thing. That's awesome. Well, if you were talking to your younger self, your younger pre-med self, or maybe in medical school, what kind of words would you want to share with her?
I would say the MCAT does not define who you are. It's not going to determine what kind of doctor it's not going to define what kind of doctor you will be. It's just another step you have to take. And my other thing I would want to say is to definitely go after your dreams, even when you're scared and even when you're doubting yourself, as long as you can tell yourself, I worked really hard to at least prepare myself and be ready for this. And I'm ready to take on whatever comes next.
And what's your YouTube channel so people can go listen to more of you?
Yeah, so my YouTube channel is The Real Skin I'm In MD. I said it very slow. Could be a tongue twister, but yes, that is my YouTube channel. I talk a lot there about my journey. As you can hear, I've been through so many little twists and turns.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your journey with our audience.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. It was great talking to you.
All right. There you have it again. Dr. Aniela Douglas, a dermatologist, reapplicant, three-time MCAT taker. And I don't say that to go, oh, look at how many times she had to take the MCAT. I'm saying it to go, look, sometimes you need to do what you need to do. If this is your goal, your dream to get into medical school, you take the MCAT three times. Maybe you take it four times. Shocker, maybe you take it five times. Potentially a future guest on the podcast. We just found out that one of the students that we work with, four-time applicant to medical school, had some major red flags on their application. just got their first acceptance to medical school after working with us for their first cycle. Fourth cycle, first cycle working with us. So if that alone, right, is just like four cycles, determination, perseverance, then I don't know what is. If you would like some help on your application with your pre-med journey, go over to medicalschoolhq.net and learn how we can help you with your application, with any of your pre-med questions. That's what we do day in and day out to help support free stuff like this podcast. I hope you enjoyed our guest today. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on The Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.